Hello and welcome to the Leaders in Tech and E-commerce podcast. I am your host, Andrei Palamariu, and I am the APEC Director for Elkut Global Executive Search. Our mission is to connect the tech and e-commerce ecosystem in Asia and globally by bringing forward some of the most interesting stories about success and failure from leaders in the industry.
Hello, everyone. It is my pleasure to welcome you today. We have a very special guest I will introduce in a second. But yes, today we are going to speak, I expect, about a multitude of topics, including supply chain design, network design, but not only this. We'll talk about AI, system thinking, and many others. I'm happy to have with us Donald Hicks. He is the CEO and founder of OptiLogic. But before I give him the chance to talk a bit more about his bio and his experience so far, I just want to paint a bit of a picture, right? So Don has also founded and led Llamasoft for a long period of time before he stepped out, before he sold it. And then he started a few other endeavors, including OptiLogic, but he's also investing in different startups. He's also involved in biotech and 3D immersive experiences. I'm just pointing it out. I'm not going into the details because I want to say I am very happy to have you down with us. And I'm just curious, maybe you can guide us through a few of the milestones that you've been through in your experience, a few of the things I was mentioning in the beginning, and just tell us how and then why now with the OptiLogic, but maybe just paint us the picture of what you've been doing so far.
Sure. First, let me say thank you for having me on your show, Andre. It's a great opportunity to talk with you. Look forward to a freewheeling dialogue. So, you know, where do we begin? I'll start by saying that there's a normal theory. Actually, you know what? I'll quote F. Scott Fitzgerald. Life has to be lived forward, but can only be understood backward. And a lot of times what looks like an intentional journey is really only intentional when you try to narrate it on a podcast or in a biography or things like that. So as we talk through things, there'll be a common theme of making a bunch of decisions and going in a direction, and then only later on sorting out what did that actually mean. And I think we can probably pick it up there. That sort of explains Llamasoft, but also it's going to explain OptiLogic as we'll see in a couple minutes. You know, educationally, I knew I was going to be in operations research from when I was in high school. Someone who went off to college came in and was talking about how she was doing this major called operations research, where you take real world problems and then you use mathematical models, and on paper or in the computer, early days of computers, you can play with the models and then turn around and change the real world based on those results. And I heard that and I said, well, why would anyone want to do anything different? And that was, I think, a junior in high school. And from that time on, I was an operations research systems engineering kind of guy. It's what I did in school. I'm so, so lucky that many decades later now, I get to use all that stuff. I still get to do OR. I still get to work with OR people. It's a beautiful thing to be able to leverage computers and decision support to do a better job making decisions about really, really complicated things. And I'm so grateful that I got to do in my work something that I would have probably done as a hobby anyways. So when I got into Llamasoft, and to be fair, Llamasoft was a zero-person company. The reason I got it started was because I wanted to make a product. Specifically, I had been working in computer simulation modeling, discrete event simulation, working at a company called ProModel, which was kind of a legend in the simulation world. And I really wanted to make a focused simulation on logistics problems, and specifically the emerging term of supply chain. And there wasn't a dedicated supply chain simulation tool. So I couldn't convince my company, ProModel, to actually build one of those. So I said, well, I guess I better start a company so I can go build one. So when I started Llamasoft, it wasn't to make money. You know, almost nothing I do is specifically to make money. It's nice when that happens. But I loved the problem. I felt like supply chain was dominated by optimization-only approaches. And this is in the late 1990s, not 1890s, like some people would say, but 1990s. And I thought, well, here's something I know a lot about because I've been working on trying to help people learn how to do simulation. learn how to apply it to supply chains. And I was having real trouble teaching them how to code it. So I said, well, maybe it'll be easier if I just code something that will write the models for them. I call that guru technology, automatic model building. And that turned out to work. I thought it would take about 2 years to really get it done. And 20 years later, I was still at LlamaSoft, still working on the same problem. The company had grown from myself to about a 500 person organization when I left in 2017. And it was 20 years on that problem. And it was time for me to take a break, time for me to step back. We should have a conversation some other time on being able to see a company grow organically from 1 to 500 people. It was a fascinating journey, but everything comes to an end. And I took a step back, and I had wanted to get involved in other areas and other applications. And, you know, if you're CEO of a 500 person company, you really can't just say, I'm staying home to practice the trumpet and I'm going to go buy a bar. So I did that after I left LlamaSoft, and I highly recommend people check out the Blue Llama Jazz Club and Restaurant on Main Street in Ann Arbor. It's become one of the premier jazz clubs in the United States. And yes, the llama part is a bit of a tribute to LlamaSoft. It's the jazz club that LlamaSoft basically paid for. That was in 2017. And by 2018, I had stepped off the board and sold the rest of my stock, and I was completely, completely out of it. And I honestly thought I was done with supply chain. Actually, I thought I'd been CEO of LlamaSoft. Why would I want to work in this field again? I felt like I'd already had the greatest job ever working with the one most wonderful team you could have. So what actually happened was I wasn't done with OR, with operations research. And I was looking around, and you know, with mixed integer linear programming, that type of problem is a submarket. There's really three main commercial solvers in there, you know, Gurobi, Cplex, and Express. But the marketplace is kind of locked up with those three guys. And I thought, well, these guys are all still using desktop software. This is 2018. What are they doing? And I thought, what we really need is OR people need a web-based studio where they can innovate. They can make models. I call that the development problem. I don't want to have to spin up and install all these software and provision a workspace from scratch every time. I need a lab where I can just on demand log in, and I've got my work set, all of the things I need to start doing problem solving. And then there's what I call the deployment problem, which is once I've solved and I've got a cool model that solves some problem in a really nice way, I need to use that as an engine. How do I deploy it? Well, shoot, that's what web-based software is for. I mean, for cloud computing, it gives you these problems on demand. So when I got OptiLogic going, it was specifically to enable OR developers to be able to make cool and interesting new formulations using optimization or simulation or combinations, and then have an API layer around it that would solve the deployment problem. And that's what we got doing. And I wanted to charge a couple hundred bucks a month for a professional license. And it was just a total geek out thing. It was so cool after all those years of kind of doing administration to get back with a small team, doing basically, you know, being the product manager, working with Mike Lloyd, my friend and lead engineer out there in Utah, actually, where I had lived there previously. And it worked when we launched this thing, and we called it Atlas, and we were not trying to be very commercial. We just wanted to serve the geek out community. And we launched that thing really right around pandemic time. So, I mean, we had more time to spend on coding. And we launched it, and we had some great interest from people who wanted to mine Bitcoins on our platform. Boy, those guys just show up everywhere. We had some really cool applications. Some were logistics oriented, but you know, I was just doing general OR. And then what happened was sort of the seismic change of when LlamaSoft got acquired by Coupa. And you know, I had been out for years at that point in time. I heard about it in the news. I started getting texts, and they're like, hey, congratulations on being a billionaire. I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't have any stock in this thing. I don't benefit from this at all. I don't even know who the hell Coupa is. I've never heard of him. Eventually, I found out, you know, with everybody else what had gone on. And then what happened next was I started getting lots and lots of calls from people in the Ann Arbor, Michigan area, people I had recruited over the years to move here, who were getting fired quickly, like mass executions. And if they weren't getting mass executions, if they weren't victims of that, they were quitting en masse. And I saw this massive amount of talent become available. And it's hard. Like, the hiring is the thing that's hard to do, to get good people who you know you can work with and get them settled in. You know, you can always write code again, but getting the people and the talent, that is the whole thing in tech. People don't understand this, but technology is a people business. You can start over from scratch. If you have the right brains, you can do it all again and do it better the second or third time. So I saw this talent becoming available, and I honestly started hiring folks into OptiLogic without having a clue what we were going to do. Like, I'm thinking, I got a platform for OR. There's talent. I better get some of that talent because someone else is going to snap it up, and then we'll figure out what the hell to do. And over the next year or so, we explored adding engines and trying to figure out what was going to happen. And I honestly wasn't sure what Coupa was going to do with LlamaSoft. I have no idea because I'd never even talked to anybody from Coupa. And what they decided to do was largely destroy it. And I thought, well, that's the stupidest thing I've ever seen in this industry, is to take the leader and then crush the life out of it and throw it in the garbage. That was a stupid idea. Like, I still, it's pretty stunning how much value those guys destroyed in such a short period of time. And, you know, there's still a handful of folks over there working away at Coupa, and I hope they're doing okay. They've been through a lot of trauma, but, you know, what they did is that they were a leader, and then they just kind of goofed it up. They kind of messed it up. So when that happened, I started hearing from potential customers and former customers, hey, can we use any of your stuff? Because we have to get off this Coupa thing. And that, the combination of talent, of capital, where investors were also saying, can we invest in OptiLogic? Are you going to get into this? And the customers in the marketplace, all of that really came together. And I basically was looking at this and said, well, I hadn't intended to go back into supply chain design, but if all these forces are coming together, I'm not going to stand in their way. And so we tilted OptiLogic and pivoted to go at supply chain design. And the shocking thing about this is, when we did that, there wasn't a cloud-based supply chain design vendor. It's crazy if you think about it. You know, LlamaSoft never had a full cloud-based solution for this. It was an enterprise solution with a web browser front end. And they kind of stayed that way. So when we, later on, when we started building our design application, we built it on top of my platform that I already had. And that greatly accelerated it. And here's the thing that's nuts. By doing it this way, what we've built at OptiLogic is a platform for supply chain, both custom apps and off-the-shelf apps. And we just built a big off-the-shelf app. We called it Cosmic Frog. Why Cosmic Frog? Well, the first thing is, of course, the people who named LlamaSoft LlamaSoft would name something Cosmic Frog, because we're nuts like that. You know, we do think that this needs to be fun. And the spirit is there, the culture is there from the early days of LlamaSoft, but we do have a lot of lessons learned. And so now we've gone at this thing, and OptiLogic, after committing to do this, pivoting and getting its Cosmic Frog ready to go, we launched that in November 2022. So it's been 15, almost a year and a half now. And the market response has been fantastic. People were ready for this application. They wanted this kind of application. And I got to tell you, there's something really satisfying to getting to start over and redo from scratch the formulation, the UI, this modeling schema, and fix all that stupid stuff we never could fix before. And, you know, we're not as good as Coupa and Supply Chain Guru. We're better. a lot better. And how are we able to do that in a couple of years? Because I spent 20 years screwing it up and making every possible wrong decision. And I'm sure I'm making more wrong decisions now, but they're different ones. And so the software is going great. The business is going great. We're on a really nice growth path. We're avoiding a lot of the problems from before, and then we're tackling the new ones that are there. And you know, we can talk about that all day long. I've been blabbing along for a while, but I'm going to stop, Andre, and let you get a word in edgewise here.
No, but that's fascinating. And I haven't been aware that you actually didn't know about Coupa at all, who they are and what they're doing. And it's a bit of an unfortunate situation. I'm sure they have their own plans, but it's good for you now that you took in the talent that was just, you know, available. And as you said, we are also in the talent game, so to speak, or in the talent business. And we see how important it is to have the right people at the right time working together in the same direction. Because again, if you have the right people, but they don't see it, they don't see the same North Star, and they have each of them have one star to follow, then it's a problem. But in your case, it sounds like you've aligned quite a lot of smart people in the same boat.
If I could just comment on that a little bit, because I want to double underline this, because these days I'm old enough that people now ask me, oh, what did you learn? Or what's the secrets to success and all that stuff? I don't have secrets. What I will say is we talk about talent, but you also have to talk about human relationships. And the people I'm working with now, they're not all from the LlamaSoft days, but many of them are. But we work together because we want to work together. And, you know, I think everybody's got talent. But the question is, how do you get a group of people to get their talents aligned? And that's a team dynamic. And how do you get a great team? Trust, loyalty. You get people who are aligned values-wise. And the people at OptiLogic, you know what? They all want to do well for the families. They want to make money. But that is not the primary driver. These are people that value relationships. We want to serve others. We want to serve our customers. And we know that the financial results, the financial upside comes from that later. And you see this dynamic playing out. The more people go grab for the cash and put that first, the harder it is to get it. And if you really want to do well financially, the best thing to do is set that aside. And think about what are you going to be proud of? And there are some people who put the money first, and there are other people who put service first. And at OptiLogic, I've just been hiring a bunch of people who put service first. And we all agree on that. There's just no arguments about it. We're loyal to people. People are loyal to the company. Sometimes people get better jobs, and it's like they have to leave because it's just a great opportunity. And those guys always know, it's an open door and I'm wishing them well, and vice versa. You know, sometimes we have to let folks go that it just wasn't a good fit or it's not working. But if you treat people with respect, you never torch those relationships. And this thing, as we said at the beginning, it's a people business, which means it's about treating people well over the long term. When you screw people over, you don't know when you're going to pay for that, but you probably will. And if you're just yourself and you treat people well over a long period of time, recruiting and management becomes a lot easier. You know, we're trying to solve complicated problems. At the core of it, it starts with great teams, and it means values, it means loyalty, it means trust. That is, you know, if you do that, you can make anything happen.
And on top of that, you already said it, it means also having fun while having all of those fundamental ingredients. And I wanted to ask you, I don't know how much time, because I want to take the discussion on the supply chain side, but I was curious about why the llama part, and what was the other one?
The cosmic frog. I'll point out, when you say cosmic frog, you have a big smile on your face. I know this is an audio podcast, but I assure you, dear listeners, Andre is smiling every time he says cosmic frog, and so do I. So LlamaSoft, the original name LlamaSoft, came from combination of fuzzy friendly llamas that were useful, you know, the pack animal, domesticated pack animal in the Peruvian Andes mountain ranges. Everybody likes a llama. And also the Dalai Lama and the Panchen Lama, the Tibetan llamas. And I wanted to bring the inaccessible wisdom of the llama and make it useful like a regular fun friendly old llama. And that's why we spelled LlamaSoft with two capital L's. And it's important to have intentionality in what you do and what you call things. How and why you name things matters. If you don't pay attention to that, you're not paying attention to a lot of stuff. You're not paying attention to why you do anything. So, you know, when OptiLogic got going, what we wanted to do is we took the Greek root about opti, trying, which meant trying for the best, not necessarily achieving it, but also logos, which is from the Latin for reason and knowledge, or sometimes translated as the word. And we wanted to bring it about knowledge and wisdom around trying to make things better, OptiLogos, OptiLogic. When we got to, what are we going to call this new thing here? And by the way, Atlas obviously is not only the Titan who holds up the world, but the Atlas rocket was actually the rocket system that was used to push the Pioneer spacecraft into space, which were the first man-made objects to leave the solar system. And so we like that for Atlas as the platform that upheld everything. And in fact, I think it was the Voyager spacecraft that got launched. And then when we were putting our supply chain design app together, there was sort of a moment where I was trying to think, well, what is design really about? And what design is, it's not optimization. Design means I am looking at all the possible futures that I could be living in. I have this state, I have this state, I have that state. I'm in the present, but I want to change my situation to be a different one. And I'm sort of misquoting Herbert Simon here, who said, Herbert Simon said that anyone designs who tries to basically change their current situation into a preferred situation. And that's what we do in supply chain design. We change the game. We change the situation to make all things easier to do, planning, optimization, management. So when I thought, I'm sitting there thinking about this picture in my head of a being sitting in the middle of where the past and the present meet the future and looking at all the possible futures. And that being had big buggy eyes and is staring into the starry night, able to see clearly all the different supply chains that we could be, so that we could choose which one do we wish and which one is going to become our new situation. And I thought it's a frog. Because it's not talking, it's just seeing with clarity, and it's seeing everything across the cosmos. That gave me a cosmic frog. I'm like, you know, cosmic frog is a great name. People will remember it. People will say, what the hell does that even mean? And if it communicates an element of fun, but also an element of thinking and enlightenment, and it sort of feels of a piece with LlamaSoft without having anything to do with llamas.
I can't agree more. It's definitely memorable, remarkable, and people will ask, what the heck is even that? And then you only need that question to get them down the rabbit hole, so to speak. I actually was thinking... Yes, please.
I wanted to add one. I can't resist. I got to add one little piece of this because we're talking about this fun element. In supply chain design, fun is not actually sort of optional. Fun is required. And this comes from an observation in the optimization problem set. When you run an optimization on a system, you are limited by the alternatives that are in that system. And what we've seen over the years is when a supply chain design person, when an engineer tries to model or optimize a system, they say, well, I'm not getting better results. How come I can't get big breakthroughs in the network? And what we point out is, well, you're restricting it to only the current alternatives. Everything about design is adding and considering new ways of doing things, new lanes, new transportation modes, new sources, new locations for plants and for warehouses, new business strategies. If you're just doing the same old stuff, you're really not designing anything. You're just optimizing the current situation. And honestly, that's what you do in planning. In the planning world, I've got a plane to fly, I've got a boat to sail, I've got a truck to drive. I've got my current situation and I'm going to make the best of it, but I really can't change it very much. In design, on the other hand, I get the breakthrough by specifically considering things I'm not doing today. Suppliers that are not in my database, ways of operating that are new. And what I'm saying is, to do supply chain design, you must have imagination. And imagination means thinking about new stuff. And how do you do that? You poke your brain. You look at the same thing from a different angle. You must shake yourself out of what your mental restrictions and open up to new ways of doing things. It's not optional. So I look at some of these companies that are out there that are trying to be so geeky and nerdy and take themselves so seriously. And look, this is serious business. I get it. You know, multi-billion dollar companies' survivals depend on getting these things right. But the thing everybody has to understand is just trying to take it seriously means you're not going to open up the environment and the culture to get the new ideas. Breakthroughs come from doing things differently from how you've done them in the past. And that means you are in the creative world. It means you better allow fun. You better have games. You better have art. You have to have a place where creativity can thrive. A design effort without creativity doesn't go anywhere. You don't get the breakthroughs. So when I think about the culture and Cosmic Frog and the fun that we have, look, it's not just a game. I mean, this is we work should be fun, but if design work isn't fun, it will fail. So it is absolutely imperative. And this is my message to whenever I'm talking to senior executives these days. It's not just a game. It's not just having fun because we're goofy. You're going to get the breakthroughs from the discarded ideas, from the guys who are thinking weird stuff, from the gals who read something on a blog and they said, let me try this in this model. That's how you get the breakthroughs. And that is the core and the heart of design. And it is a very different realm of decision-making from planning and from execution.
I want to double click on the last point, being a different realm. From my interactions with most of our clients, which are Fortune 500 companies or their equivalents, what we see is supply chain is the place where things get done. Supply chain people are the guys and ladies who are able to, you know, roll up their sleeves and get things delivered, done, you know, anything that has to, but that's, and fighting fires in. And what I'm trying to say here, it's a lot of focus on, you know, the short term. And why I'm mentioning this, we had a bit of a chat before we started, but short term is good and it's necessary. You have to solve the problems that are, the fires that are burning, right? You have to put those out. But what you're saying here is, okay, but if you want to actually do something innovative, you actually have to step out of that zone and go think long term or think slow. And where I'm going here is, we were talking about Daniel Kahneman and his book, Thinking Fast and Slow, and the ways of a human being, of how things are working in our brain most of the times. Most of the times we are reacting to stimuli or things are happening to us. But when magic happens and fun happens is when we can actually take it slow and come up from a left field or from a longer lens type of a situation. So what I'm trying to ask you, Don, is what can you talk about this type of thinking fast and slow in supply chain? And maybe also if you can give us a remarkable situation or example where one of the clients or one of the companies you work with has applied this and you've seen it work and it was really wow. It had a wow factor just because they stepped out of it and they used the design thinking strategy, so to speak.
Sure. So there's a lot to unpack.
Yeah.
Take a crack at it. First of all, I wanted to highlight and thank you for bringing up his name is Dr. Daniel Kahneman, but he went by Danny, and it was my incredible pleasure. It's one of the heights of my career to have dinner with Danny Kahneman, and I go to meet him. I'm like, sir, how, you know, being all serious, sir, I really, you know, I'm so honored to meet. He's like, call me Danny. And he was such a lovely man. My whole family had him. He was the last speaker I had for the last SummerCon I did at LLamasoft. Back then it was the last one, so I blew what we call a boatload of money on, let me get the best guy I could possibly, I've always wanted to talk to, and have him come in. And Danny was that you just don't get what a wise, generous human soul he was. He was brilliant. You know, he won the Nobel Prize in economics, and he would probably say, what am I doing in economics? You know, he felt he was more of a psychologist, and he brought the psychology elements into decision making, which has a lot of implications in economics. In economics, you start by assuming, hey, everybody makes rational decisions, but people don't make rational decisions. No kidding. Danny spent his entire, you know, incredible life studying the ways that humans make decisions and the mistakes that they make. And he had deep insight into his own mistakes. I'll never forget one of the takeaways from reading his work and also talking with him when he said, you know, I see all of these flaws, attribution problems, anchor and adjust bias. There's a whole bunch of these classic decision kind of traps that you fall into. And he was open about the fact that he can see these, and he still, and he himself makes these same mistakes. Even he even sees when he's doing it, and he still makes the mistakes. He's still overconfident in his own decision, even though intellectually he knows he shouldn't be. But he still has that confidence. He's like, you know, it's wired in with people. And he said, you know, the best you can do is to understand and be aware of your biases and your the problems you have with your thinking. But don't pretend like you're going to change yourself. You become aware of it, and then you can perhaps compensate. You can be on guard for the problems that you make. And so I want to urge everybody, go read Danny Kahneman's work. Thinking Fast and Slow is a great place to start. I would also recommend Michael Lewis's book, The Undoing Project. The Undoing Project tells the story of Danny Kahneman's friendship and partnership with Amos Tversky. And Amos is not as well known because he passed tragically at a much younger age, but it was their collaboration that really unlocked this entire field. And telling the story in The Undoing Project, it's almost like a detective story. It's a love story. It's an intellectual hunt. It's brilliant. And Danny sadly passed away last week, but at the age of 90. But man, that he lived a big life. He was so influential. And you know, we can grieve, but I would also celebrate what a life well lived, and so big. And he's influenced so many people, and you know, not the least of which I've his thoughts have influenced me hugely. And they should influence supply chain executives across the board. But because to make this connection, Danny talked a lot about the fact that human decision making roughly falls into kind of the urgent stuff I got to take care of right now. Your lizard brain, your quick response. You talked about firefighting. You know, if you've got a fire going on, you better put out the fire. You don't have time to sit and think about, gee, maybe I should have a better fire alarm or a fire retardant system in the future. No, put out the fire. And at the same time, if all you're ever doing is firefighting, all you're ever doing is dealing with short-term problems, you never take the step back to say, what's causing all of these problems? Am I even in the right place? You know, if I've got all these fires popping up, maybe I should really shut this building down and get a different building, or I should relook at the entire system. And this is the crucial point. And again, this is something I speak with senior executives directly about in the supply chain world. It's not a matter of one is more important than the other. You cannot, a supply chain is a complex system. It's like that 747, you know, Air Force One. It's always flying. It's always out there. You rarely get a chance to land your 747 and then just repair it. You're always flying the plane. You don't have time to think about alternative plane and wing designs. And yet, if all you're ever doing is dealing with short-term problems, eventually you find that you're not well suited to the environment. As an organization, you have to do two things, not just one thing. The one thing, and Danny called it System One, Other folks call it urgent decision making. I might call it planning and execution in the supply chain world. I got to make the best of this. I have to make the decisions today that my clients, my customers need their deliveries. You know, you're quite right in the to point out in the supply chain world, we move stuff, we get things done. It's one of the reasons why I think supply chain executives are often very risk averse, in many ways more risk averse than almost than any other sort of corporate function. They're risk averse because when they make bad decisions, boats run into bridges, trucks go to the wrong place, factories stop operating when critical supplies aren't there. Things go wrong and it's obvious. So supply chain executives are naturally a little, they're more risk averse because they're dealing with real world problems. But at the same time, we must get breakthroughs. They are hungry for improvements and for the big change. And for, honestly, you're operating the system and the environment out there is changing. Back in the, and I'll give you a couple of broader examples. You know, back in the late 90s, early 2000s, China was opening up to the world. If you're a manufacturer and you suddenly have access to all of this labor, you know, skilled, low-cost labor, if, you know, it's not in your current supply chain, but failing to use that and take advantage of the opportunity there means if I don't do that, I'm probably going to be out of business in 10 years. And people had to rethink their supply chains back then. And that's a design problem. What does it mean when I locate some of my critical supplies offshore, when I have to, you know, put a Pacific Ocean between my supplier and some of my value-added factories? And companies adjusted. And now here we are, you know, 2024, and the pendulum is now swinging back to say, well, actually, China doesn't give me the sort of low-cost advantages anymore. And there's a whole bunch of disadvantages because now, because of the political situation, what happens if I just lose access to my supplier base? What happens if I get a 25% tariff slapped on things? What if I simply can't depend on it? And so systems that were designed to take advantage of that global supply base, you know, I had my network was optimized for that. And now it feels like it's designed for the wrong problem. And we saw this in pandemic, where there were a lot of companies that were operating on supply chains that were designed in the 20 years before pandemic. And it seemed like these supply chains were designed to deliver low service at a high cost with a huge amount of risk. And that's because they were evolved and designed for the previous environment. And guess what? The environment changed. And you know what? The environment's going to change again. How do you stay alive in changing environments? Supply chain design. Supply chain design is the critical business function that lets you alter the structure, alter the system to be suited for the new environment, for the new changes. But you still have to keep running your current system. And this is the challenge for supply chain executives across the world. You have to do both. You must operate with excellence in planning and execution, but you must also have a design team and a design effort that is never ending. It is a continual renewal and a continual relook to get ahead of things, to say, what am I moving towards? And I always get a kick out of it when people say, well, you know, I did my supply chain design. We do one of those every 3 years or so. We just rerun the model and get the new warehouse locations. That is so, so old school. It's so last millennium. When people are doing supply chain design, they're not just looking at, you know, you can move buildings around, but you're also looking at small changes. Maybe I'm going to run a product every shift, or maybe I'm going to specialize and I'm going to change what SKUs are running in which factories. I did a lot of work, big time computer simulation work with Staples back in the LLamasoft days, one of the most innovative projects I've ever seen. They weren't moving warehouses around, but they did want to play with, how can I alter the SKU strategy? How can I put different SKUs in different DCs and then predict what's the effect going to be on my last mile routing? In order to do that, I'd need to be able to generate routes that I don't even do today, to customers I don't even have today. And you can do all that at a detailed level, at the order level, at the SKU level in these computer models now. That's what design gives you. You can envision at the detailed level an alternative future. But guess what? Somebody's still got to be getting those trucks out there today. The task for the executive is operate your current system well with planning and execution excellence, and simultaneously have a parallel effort that is focusing on designing the future. It used to be the case that these things, that the models and the data for planning and for design were different. That, you know, you would do planning models at a very detailed level, and you would design kinds of things at a very high level. That's all gone. Planning and design are now using the same data sets and the same models, but you're using them under different decision-making contexts. And there's a people side too, if I can even pivot to the people part. If I'm a planner, I'm a supply chain planner running my day-to-day, making these decisions, overseeing inventory strategies, making adjustments, how can I do design? The fact is, if I'm flying the plane, I don't have a chance to go rethink about the plane's design. The people who are planning these supply chains are often the guys that should be working on design projects. But I beg executives, don't take a planner and tell them also do design at the same time. You know, if you're flying the plane, fly the plane really well. If you're going to do design, get out of the pilot seat, go hang out and go do a design project and use that domain knowledge. But now bring your imagination and think about alternative ways to change the game. There's an organizational discipline to being able to plan well and design well. It's not about the data. It's not about the tech, really. It's about the people and the context. And system one is most of what these companies do. System one is lots and lots of rapid decisions. It's flying the plane. It's driving the truck. It's planning. System two is hard work, intentionally, deliberately stepping back, trying new things and imagining new alternatives. That's the whole game. And I got to tell you, there's still so much misunderstanding. When I go through this with our clients and I talk to senior execs about this, it tends to make a lot of sense to them. But then they hear the utter nonsense being piped out there by supply chain software vendors that are just trying to confuse them because they want to sell them something. Some of the idiotic nonsense that's out there where people are just like, well, we mush together planning and design and it's all the same thing. It's bullshit. And the people who are saying that, I think actually know that it's bullshit. But they don't care because they want to sell you something, get their money, and get private equity off their back. And, you know, eventually these things come back to bite you, I think. For us, we focus on what we believe and how we think we can help clients. So, sorry, I did go off on a bit of a rant there, Andre. But I really, really care about this. It's a really important issue.
I can feel the passion and I appreciate the honesty, Don. So thank you. I'm also conscious of time, so I don't want to go too much over the time we allocated, but I wanted to ask you another question, maybe as a conclusion or close to it. So if you can imagine, maybe we go through an imagination exercise. You touched a lot of interesting topics and messages, but let's imagine for a second that you have a magic wand and you can only magically use it once. And let's target the supply chain community this time. If you could change one thing in the way of acting or thinking of the supply chain executives, or it can be also, you know, the anybody working in supply chain now in the big corporates, what would that one thing be and maybe why? And maybe we close off on this question.
Ooh, that's a tough one. Let me say it back. So I've got my magic wand. I've got my cosmic frog magical wand. And what's the one thing I could change? I'm always a big fan of wisdom. And I think so many problems stem originally from the misalignment of incentives. Well, what I mean is we have a major problem in the West in capitalist systems, where we have incentives that drive short-term thinking and short-term decision-making. And yet we have a lot of problems that can only be solved with long-term thinking and long-term decision-making. And if you're the CEO of a company, what's the normal, I forget what the tenure is now for a CEO. Typically, though, I think I saw it was 3 or 4 years. You're highly incentivized to make your money and do the best you can and pump up the stock price and hit your incentives because you're going to be gone in 3 or 4 years. And so these systems, in their pursuit of shorter and shorter timeframes of, I want the payback in 12 months. Well, you know, if you run an optimization model and you require everything to be a pay, to have a under 12 month payback period, you almost never change anything. You have to make big changes, you have to make big investments. And yet to have those pay off, you have to have longer time horizons. And yet that we continue to drive to shorter term thinking, shorter term incentives. How do we align decision making on a day-to-day basis with longer term results? Nobody knows how to do this. Boards struggle with this. Supply chain executives are part of the corporate team that implement the strategy. You know, it's core, along with finance and HR and sales and marketing. Supply chain executives have to be thinking about long term, but how do we align their incentives so that they can make big changes and not just focus on the short term? If I could wave my magic wand, I would create a proper compensation strategy that would align, that would say the decisions I make now in the short term, I'm going to be rewarded based on how my company does in the long term. We don't really know how to do that very well. And if I could wave my wand, I would create that system. And then everybody would be thinking about, if I make a decision that's going to hurt my company a couple years from now, I care about that. If my company's going to benefit, you know, maybe not this year, but over the next 5 years, it's going to hugely benefit. I should share in that benefit. We don't know how to synchronize compensation at the senior level and then, you know, kind of on down through the organization. That's the, to me, that linkage is missing. It's difficult. You see it when it's there. And the last thing is I'll point out, this is, you know, supply chain and is a supply chain technology. A lot of it is driven by innovation, is driven by investment. And you see a lot of times, these companies have that are investing companies have very short-term thinking. I'm going to put in my money for 3 years and then that's it. I'm a private equity company. Private equity's game is to buy assets, respin and optimize them, and then sell them for a higher price. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it actually is a really, really good and important way of getting efficiency out of these assets. But don't kid yourself that that's a long-term strategy. When a PE-backed company comes in there and says, you know, we're in this for the long term, I'm going to say, oh, you must not be a PE company then. And it's not a slam on PE. It's not an insult, but you have to know. The game is buy a company, run it for a couple of years, and sell it. And, you know, when I sold LlamaSoft to TPG, what TPG did was not, there was nothing wrong with it, but they were not in it for the long term. That's not why people invest their money in TPG, right? They give TPG the money, TPG makes the investments, they optimize the asset, and then they flip it. That is the job. That is what, you know, most private equity groups do. There are some that are longer-term investors. There's exceptions everywhere. But we just have to be aware of those models. Nobody is immune to this. You know, I'm not going to sit here and say, I look forward to my grandchildren inheriting OptiLogic. Because every company has an arc and has a beginning, a middle, and an end, except for IBM. And you know, someday when the sun has burned out all of its hydrogen and comes to consume the earth, all there's going to be are cockroaches and IBM sales hubs. That's it. That's the entire planet. For the rest of us, we have a trajectory. And you know, OptiLogic is in this for the long haul. It's about legacy and it's about impact. These things matter more to me than anything else right now, because I'm so grateful for this ride that I've been on. And OptiLogic is a is a company that's going to make money, but it is doing it by doing the right things for customers. We have already pushed the edge. And I do want to point out, we didn't have time to talk about machine learning and AI, but I have some major, major announcements coming at our big event, OptiCon, on May 28th. We're going to be making some major product events, and you're going to see a beautiful product called Leapfrog that is a game changer in the design space. And that's all I'm going to say about it. We've been focusing on how can we really use AI to assist what designers do, not just as a parlor trick, not just as a report generator, but truly transformative in the design space. I can't wait to talk about it. I can't wait to show it to you. And guys, it's coming. It's going to be really disruptive. So Andre, thanks for taking the time to talk with me, by the way. And I've talked your ear off, but you're so good at these questions. I can't help it.
I appreciate the sharing and mostly the honest and authentic and passionate sharing, Don. It's fascinating to hear your story and especially to see how much energy you still have in the tank after doing all of the Llama stuff, and now you're doing it again with OptiLogic. So all the best to you, and I do want us to catch up again after you do the Leapfrog announcement, and we'll definitely have to talk more about the ML and AI. So on this note, thank you again, and we'll be in touch again.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For all the show notes and information discussed in the episode, please follow elcatglobal.com/podcast. Also, if you found this interesting, please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, or one of the podcast platforms. We are looking forward to your feedback.